Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, this past weekend, all of the crazies were in attendance at the Q Quack Confab at the Ahern Hotel in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. That's right. The right-wing loons were out in full, didn't have their costumes on. I was expecting costumes. And the thing is, you could have attended the overpriced gathering of fellow Facebook-polluted keyboard patriots under the banner of For God and Country Patriot Double Down, or whatever the hell that was, or the new RNC convention. It was so bad that even Michael Flynn pulled out. But on their website, they had George Papadopoulos was there, and then mostly special guests who they did not name. Very, very bizarre. But I was looking at the prices, $650 to get in for the weekend. At the lowest level, $1,300, $3,000. You could stream it online for $1,776, their favorite number. I gotta wonder how many of those people actually paid and how many were just comped. But some fun, some quackery, some kookery, and some interesting things to talk about, which is why I thought the best person to talk about the Q-Kook Confab is a comedian, and that's why I've asked our good friend, comedian Pete Dominic, to come talk with us. Pete is also the host of Stand Up with Pete Dominic that you can find on all of your podcast places. Pete, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, always a pleasure to join you. Thank you for having me. And I was really sorry that I missed the convention this year. I like to try to go and spend as much money as I can to meet nobodies in Vegas at these conventions. And if they'd paid me to join them for the right price, I would have gone out with my QAnon brothers.
There you go.
Sisters.
There you go. No, that and look, it was a bunch of people that I've never heard of. Papadopoulos I heard of, but Michael Flynn wasn't there. There was the Cowboy for Trump guy, the founder of Cowboys for Trump. I guess is now just a cowboy, because he kind of threw Trump under the bus by saying, "Look, Trump promised Hillary was going to jail, and the person who ended up going to jail was the Cowboy for Trump guy."
Yeah, so there's a fascinating, I think it's a really fascinating way to talk about that, because right-wing radio and media has always done this. They demand that politicians, Republicans, do a thing, and if they don't, they're not Republicans. They're rhinos. They're fake. But the truth is, they can't do certain things. They try. But they can't do them. There's certain things they cannot do, which is why I'll never forget. And I wrote a piece about this for the Daily Beast years ago. Ron Johnson, the horrific conspiracy theorist racist senator from Wisconsin, was on Mark Levin, who's a powerhouse right-wing media radio show. He was on a show. And Mark Levin was screaming at this far-right senator, "You're not doing it. Why aren't you doing it?" And Ron Johnson said, "We don't have the votes. We can't do it." The difference between radio hosts and actual politicians is one just has to get ratings and sell advertising, or in this case in Vegas convention, sell tickets. Once you're actually in government, you have to govern. And there are some things you actually can't do and some you can. But on radio and media, they just demand lock her up, lock Hillary up. Well, they tried, but they didn't have a case.
Right. There was no there.
Well, Comey investigated her twice, and they couldn't make a case.
Right.
That's the bottom line. So it just became a chant, and it was always a lie. It's not unlike, build the wall. He didn't do that either, and Mexico didn't pay for it. You can say things on the stump or on the radio, but once you get elected, you gotta actually govern. And they know they can't do it. And that's the disconnect on the right.
Yeah. And I look at this Cowboy for Trump guy who's now just a cowboy, whining about this. And when I saw this, I go, yeah, there was nothing there to lock Hillary up for. But there was something there to lock you up for. January 6th was not the frat party that disgraced former Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark Jr. said it was at the little confab, because he thought it was just a frat party. No, it wasn't a big deal. He said, if you want to see an insurrection, we'll show you an insurrection. I'm going, wait a second, is this the battle cry for the next January 6th?
But it's also, I think it's all so phony. Like, those guys got paid to be at that convention, probably a good amount of money. I get paid to speak at places. I understand how this works, but this, I just don't understand it. They beat the shit out. They beat the snot. I didn't say it. I didn't land it. I didn't hit the T. Come on, Rick. I didn't hit the T. They beat the snot out of police officers. They broke into the Capitol. They vandalized the place. It's just so weird to hear them say things like they were tourists or at a frat party when we have eyes. They committed federal crimes, several of them. And Clark knows this. All of the leaders of the party know this, but they're taking the money at the grift. They're promising, you know, that there's going to be another insurrection, another revolution that they're not going to show up for because they're not getting paid. Here's the thing. If they're not getting paid, they're not showing up, right?
Nope, that's it. That's it in a nutshell. This is all about the grift. And look, I look at this whatever you want to call this gathering of kooks. It's about the money, as all these things really are. And it's frustrating. But my problem is there are some true believers. You know, well down on the IQ scale, there are a bunch of people who are going, yeah, I believe. For instance, this guy who it just came out, in insurrection. And hey, by the way, when you're committing treason, make sure that you broadcast your treason and then point people in the direction to say, hey, look at the treason I just committed. Yeah. But I look at this guy, this Philip James Weisbecker, who evidently outed himself on Facebook when he posted the interview with Glenn Greenwald and Tucker Carlson and said, if you want to know the truth, ask me. Well, that got federal investigators looking at him. And, well, now he's been indicted. And what we find out is this guy believes that Ashley Babbitt never existed. Trump is still president. And a whole bunch of other just craziness.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's where we're at. I mean, this used to be these beliefs were on the fringe for a long time because not everybody had a platform. Not everybody's voice got heard. It's even like, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine in Australia, and he's like, mate, you guys are crazy. You got way too much speech. There's too much speech. Everybody doesn't get to say something, mate. You can't let crazy people in front of a microphone. He's talking about these, you know, Board of Education meetings. He's like, they don't have that there. You know, I never held that belief. As a stand-up comic, I was always for the most possible speech. But now that everybody has a camera and a microphone and a platform, I'm starting to rethink that to some extent because that people believe the stuff that Weisbecker espouses, that Michael Flynn espouses, that Glenn Beck, you know, for years. And they all have huge platforms to be heard, which is why we are in the situation we're in. That did not used to be the case for most of this country's lifetime. You were on the fringe. You were screaming on a sidewalk. And now you can have a YouTube channel with millions of people where you've convinced them the moon is made of cheese, which it might. I don't know. I would like to find out.
I've never been there. So maybe you can get Jeff Bezos to take you to the moon.
Well, I just hope that the next I'm hearing talk today in the news. Actually, NASA's talking about going back to the moon. I just hope they send a black female astronaut and she plants a flag and then takes a knee by it. Talk about outrage.
That would send these people crazy, and who knows what they would do then? You know, who knows?
They blow up the moon.
They would blow up the moon
to get that flag. Yeah, they would.
But here's the other thing we find out today, and look, it's all fun and games when you're talking about, you know, just, you know, Joe the plumber, or, you know, John the garbage man, or, you know, some of these other kooks who showed up on January 6th. But when you start looking at the names of the people in Congress who participated in this. This is serious stuff. Look, I mean, you know, it's one thing that you had a bunch of kooks show up and a bunch of people who were duped into believing that they were saving the country and that Trump was actually, this is the funniest part of all, that Trump was actually going to pardon them and actually going to stand with them. But you got members of Congress who were part of this. And as we, you know, you got the report out by Rolling Stone that laid out a bunch of these, Gosar, Boebert, Brooks, Cawthorn, Biggs, and Gohmert, of which we all knew, but now saying, hey, they were part of all the planning.
Yeah, it'll be real. I interviewed Glenn Kirshner today about this, former federal prosecutor, and, you know, trying to make this case. But I've always been kind of, I don't know, I'd love to know what you think about this, Rick, but I've always thought that January 6th was kind of a riot that got out of control. Like, I didn't see it as a well-planned operation that they were planning to break in and prevent the counting from happening. I've always thought, wow, it happened organically. I'm one of those people. A lot of people think have espoused that belief. I'm open to, you know, I want to know what you think about it. But
I'll push back a little bit.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. Most people do. But I want to know, you know, 650 people have been arrested. They should face, you know, the full extent of the law for what they did. But were there organizers, and what are they responsible for, and what's the evidence? This Rolling Stone article has a couple of witnesses that that say that more than one congressman or woman apparently promised pardons. If you go in and you do this or you do that, no matter what crime you commit, beat the hell out of cops, go in and take a dump in Nancy Pelosi's office, steal her laptop, and overthrow the election, we will pardon you. You get a blanket pardon. If that actually happened, and if there's proof that happened, that would certainly change my mind about the opinion I just espoused. But how did you see January 6th in terms of, you know, the crimes that were committed by organizers?
Yeah, I said from the beginning,
Glenn makes the case that that you can make a legal case, criminal case, that Trump, Giuliani, and others incited a riot by what they said. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer.
I don't disagree with him, but I believe the people who showed up went there believing they were going to stop the counting of the electoral votes. They went there with that mindset. I spent a couple of days beforehand reading Parler and all the crazy right-wing sites. Those people who showed up with the zip ties, the people who brought the makings of a gallows, the people who had a well-planned out way of getting into the building. They knew the soft spots. I believe they knew what they were doing. The vast majority of the people, no. They were just dupes who showed up. But I do believe there was an element that was well-prepared and well-organized and well-trained on how to get into that building and how to get to the place where they stopped the certification of that vote. I do believe that.
You make good arguments. To be fair, I have the makings of the gallows in my trunk of my Chevy Volt most days. So
really?
I'm not so certain that it's such a weird thing to do. Is that weird?
No, I mean, seriously, I mean, you don't show up to a rally with a whole bunch of zip ties for no reason.
Right.
Sorry, I got some in my garage.
I know. And let me push back, play devil's advocate. These guys are such cosplay fake. Some of them are obviously too many of them, real cops, real or ex-military. But I still see them as these immature, you know, Civil War reenactors on the wrong side, by the way. And I just don't know. I mean, I think they go everywhere with their guns and with their zip ties and with their whatever, their stupid outfits. I feel like they always have that stuff at the ready because they think the revolution could break out at any moment.
No, I don't disagree with you on that, but I do believe some of them, because I was reading the, like I said, Parler and some of the right wing, garbage going on. And I woke up the morning of January 6th and I asked the question, how much blood will be shed today? How much violence is going to happen in the streets?
Well, and the fact on January 5th on his show, Steve Bannon predicting it, my good friend, Steve Bannon. And, you know, I think that is going to be a real, that's why they so badly need to question him about what he might have known. And by the way, on the Bannon thing, it's a tough call. And another thing I talked with Kirshner on my show that'll post late tonight, tomorrow, which is that what do you do, Rick, when you know someone wants to be a martyr? He wants to be held in contempt.
Yep.
He wants to be arrested and he wants to go to prison. That will bring him so much more credibility. And Glenn says that we don't look at it that way. We prosecute crimes, whether or not it's good for that person's popularity, social media, or you know, the movement itself, is not why we might choose to prosecute someone. So that's the, you know, more legal, naked legal point of view. But just to be clear, this is exactly what Steve Bannon wants.
Well, without question. I said that from the very beginning, because he knows it's going to take a couple of years for this to work its way through the courts, because we don't have if it's you or me being subpoenaed and we don't show up, they come, they drag us into the hearing and slap us down.
Right.
Someone like Bannon, who can afford the legal fight that is coming, we could drag this out for years. And again, I point back to Eric Holder. During the Fast and Furious thing, he was held in contempt, and it took, 5 years, 6 years before they finally came to a settlement, and he still didn't testify.
I didn't realize that it took that long with Holder, but Bannon can definitely afford it. He made a lot of money his entire life, but he also made a lot of money on that wall grift, which he was arrested for.
Yeah.
and then pardon. I mean, but
here's my problem. I mean, you've got all these, the craziest of the craziest aren't just the people who are shouting on the street corner anymore or wearing the tinfoil hat. They're actually running for Congress. And I look in, you know, AOC's opponent, this crazy, what, Tina Fordy or whatever her name is. This woman's a lunatic.
I don't know. I don't know about this. I got to look it up.
She's literally a lunatic. And I look at, you know, in Ohio, you got a guy running for Senate, this Josh Mandel, who's running around, you know, still spewing the big lie. Everywhere you look, there's crazy and then crazier running on the Republican side of the aisle.
Yeah, it's nuts. It's everywhere. It's in my local community where at the Board of Education meeting the other night, a woman went up and she was so mad, Rick, that Joe Biden has replaced Columbus with Indigenous Peoples Day. And she went on a rant about Columbus is Italian like me and he discovered American. And then it was my turn at the mic. And I said, I'm so sorry, but Columbus actually didn't discover America, actually never stepped foot in North America. Actually, Columbus discovered Barbados and thought it was India. Then he killed everybody. So I'm not sure what you're so upset about. But that's, you know, people believe all kinds of stuff now. And that's what we're up against. And it's really hard to be to combat that.
But Pete, she did her research.
Yeah, I do my research. I'm so tired with these people doing their own. It's one thing to research like political things or even constitutional law issues or something, but you don't, I'm sorry, and this goes to liberals, this goes to my neighbors, everybody, know you don't get to do research on science. Here's what you get to do: make friends with some scientists and doctors. That's what I've done. I don't do any research. I don't look it up. I don't look at, you know, if you don't know what a randomized controlled trial is or a peer-reviewed study or what NIH stands for, stop Googling stuff. Ask a doctor friend. Ask a scientist. Make friends with them and find out what they're doing with their kids. And then just do that because they love their kids as much as you love yours. Stop doing your own research. You're a mechanic. You're a comedian. You're not a researcher. Enough.
Yeah. No. I ask people who they're doing their own research. I say, well, can I get a reading list? I'd like to see what you view as research. You know, as one of my comedian friends says, you know, sitting on the toilet with your mouth open watching YouTube is not research.
Well, it is. I would push back on that. It depends on what you're watching. But no, listen, I mean, you could even read an abstract of a study and then come away with a different conclusion than the people who conducted the study with. I love marijuana, but I had a long argument with a guy who's like, marijuana cures cancer. I'm like, I love marijuana. It does a lot of things. It doesn't cure cancer. He goes, look at this study. I looked at the study. I contacted the researcher. I go, does this study say what the guy who's telling me says it says? She goes, no. No, that's not what it is. And he still wasn't convinced. Yeah. I found the lady who did the study, and even she was saying, so people will hear whatever they want to hear, see whatever they want to see. But it's stop with the doing the research on your own. You can't. You have an associate's degree in humanities, and I'm talking about myself now.
There you go. And that's what you do. Just stop doing your own research. That's the that's the bottom line out of this. Stop doing your own research.
Well, not on science. No. No. If you want to know about a scientific issue, ask a scientist.
There you go.
If you want to know about truck driving, ask a truck driver. I think we're good. That's how I've always done it. It seemed to be pretty effective.
Good stuff.
If you want to know what Steve Bannon smells like, ask me. I shared a studio with him for a year, and it's like nothing. He smells like transparent, clear. And one time, I was just messing with him. I walked in, and I held up a mirror. You could not see his reflection.
I don't, but nobody wants to smell Steve Bannon. Nobody.
So, I'm telling you, he smells like nothing because vampires don't have a scent. And then one day I walked into Sirius, Rick, and he was gone. He was gone. He turned into a bat and flew away and ran the Trump campaign.
There you go. Pete, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff. Thanks so much for your time, man.
Love you, buddy. Thanks for having me.
All righty. Our good friend Pete Domenech. Make sure you check out his website, standupwithpetedomenech.com. We'll get links out on social media. Quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1886. That was the day Henry George accepted the nomination to run for mayor of New York on the United Labor Party ticket. In cities across the country, trade unionists met to found state labor parties and to hammer out political platforms for local and state elections. In New York City, ULP advocates issued the Clarendon Hall platform and nominated Henry George as the ULP candidate for the mayoral race. George had gained prominence with the 1879 publishing of his book, Progress and Poverty. In it, he addressed private land ownership as the basis for inequality and advocated for a single tax system. At New York's Cooper Union that evening, where thousands of supporters gathered, George addressed the crowd. He presented the ULP platform of higher wages, shorter hours, better working conditions, government ownership of railroads and communications, and the end to police repression. Burroughs and Wallace described the scene that night in their book, Gotham, A History of New York City, to 1898. During his speech, George declared, quote, "This government of New York City, our whole political system is rotten to the core." He argued that politicians had made a trade out of assembling votes and selling them to powerful interests. What business got in return was police protection, lax enforcement of housing and health codes, friendly judges, and fat franchises. To purify the political order, working class voters had to sever ties to all the established parties and choose from their own ranks. For a party that had just been founded weeks before, George came in second. But like its sister organization in Chicago, the New York ULP would split over issues of socialism within a year.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.